Hello, occult friends. My name is Owen.
My name is Max.
And we are the occultists. It's the end of a very long, hard road for the occultists. It's taken a while to actually get here, and a lot of frustration. But we actually managed. So, hi, how are you guys doing? The reason this has taken so long is twofold. First off, I was editing a book for Accent UK, which took up a lot of my time, and it was absolutely fantastic, but it was a big book, and it was very, very time-consuming. It's called Who on Earth Was Thaddeus Mist? And I'm going to give a major plug, if you'll bear with me, Max. It's available on the Accent UK website, and Jim Schwitzer, our friend over at the Crypt of the Macabre podcast, he wrote a small section for it. Max also wrote a section, did you not?
I did.
And I wrote a big chunk and then had to pull all the writers and artists together because it's a big anthology. So that took a long time. So we couldn't actually get around to this podcast any sooner. And then when we actually did get around to actually seeing, going, okay, let's record the revenge section. Well, we fucked it up.
We did. This is the second time we've recorded this particular episode.
Yeah. So we're amateurs. Let's not beat around the bush here. We're technological retards.
We are.
So we're really sorry it's taken this long, but we're here now. So shut up and put up with it.
And we are over Skype, so I really hope you can hear both of us and that we are recording this right today.
Well, it's tough tits if you can't, because we're not doing it again.
Exactly.
So this episode is based on one we loosely decided upon months ago, called Roaring Rampage of Revenge. So we're going to talk about some of our favorite revenge movies. And we said in the last podcast this was kind of kicked off by sitting down and watching Kill Bill 1 and 2. And we love both of those movies, or one movie if you count them as one big movie. But that really kicked off thinking about, well, what are our favorite or what are really good revenge flicks?
Yes.
I am drinking coffee at the same time, so that's why there's a huge pause. So, I'm Skyping in from the north, Max.
Yeah, I'm in Reading today at my parents' house.
Yeah. So, let's kind of kick off the movies we chose. I plumped for a Vincent Price movie from 1973 called Theatre of Blood.
It's a good one. I picked Batman Mask of the Phantasm, which is from 1993. Just fabulous. But we should probably start with your one. Should we talk about that one first?
Yeah, let's do it. If you haven't seen these movies because you've forgotten we exist, kind of stop the podcast now, go and watch them because they're really good movies. And then you can kind of come back and it'll be kind of a little bit more interesting than hearing us harp on about movies you've never ever seen.
Yeah, and if you're in the UK, these two are really easy to get hold of. So,
okay, so Theatre of Blood. Having seen a few other Vincent Price movies after watching this, because I just picked this up sort of off the cuff, it's not the best Vincent Price movie out there, however much fun it is. It's from kind of the 70s, so it was, I would say, probably towards the end of his tenure. It's still a lot of fun. I know you're not a huge fan of this movie.
I really am. I think it's so much fun and it's so ridiculous, and there are some really beautiful moments in it, but it is ridiculous, more so than Vincent's other movies that I do prefer. I think that's what it is. I just prefer some of his other films, that's all. But I do really like it. It's good fun.
We're both big fans of Vincent Price, and it's kind of one of the reasons that we linked up with Ryan and Jim from the Crypt of the Macabre, because they're huge Vincent Price and Peter Cushing fans and things like that, as are we. And let's just talk really briefly about how we kind of got into Vincent Price and how he sort of came into our lives? With you first.
Well, for me, my first exposure to Vincent Price was actually he was in a series of Scooby-Doo, and he was called Vincent Van Ghoul, and he was a severed phantom head in a crystal ball. I don't really remember too much about the series. It was probably terrible, but as a kid, I adored it, and he was my favorite thing about it. And we
I
used to.
mean, no, go on, you're saying.
No, I was just going to say, we used to play it on the playground, and whenever we did, I used to always want to be Vincent Van Gogh, and I used to hide behind a bench, so just my head was showing, and I would pretend to be this severed head, a very
The severed
bizarre
head.
child, yeah.
I vaguely remember this TV show. I mean, I'm a big Scooby-Doo fan, obviously myself, but I was just with the Scooby and Shaggy, and it was just like, let's just go off and get some munchies, you know. I wasn't with the kind of villains a lot of the time. But I
He wasn't
vaguely
a villain, he was a
remember
good guy.
Vincent Van Gogh.
Yeah, he was a good guy in it. He helped
He
them
sounds like
out.
an
Like
asshole.
they channeled his crystal ball thing and they would
All
talk to him and
right.
he would tell them where the bad guys were. I
Was
think.
the
This was a long time ago.
artwork specifically made to look like
Oh
Vincent
yeah. He looked
Price?
just like him.
Right. Okay, that's cool.
Google it. Just Google it.
All right. Other cool kid kind of appearances. I know you haven't seen it yet, but we talk about Frankenweenie, and there's a science teacher in that. That is, it's actually John Landau, who, if you see like Tim Burton movies, he's in Ed Wood. He plays who does he play? Isn't he Lugosi, Martin Landau?
Yeah, he is.
Yeah. Well, he's in Frankenweenie, but he's doing Vincent Price.
I thought he was dead.
Who?
Martin Landau.
No, he's live and kicking, man.
Oh, maybe it's just because he dies in Ed Wood.
Yeah. Well, he's
Maybe
Lugosi.
that's what I'm thinking about.
But he does Vincent Price kind of riff in Frankenweenie. He's a science teacher.
Okay.
And so Tim Burton, for me, was how I got into Vincent Price, through Edward Scissorhands. And seeing him as a bit part, I think that was one of his very, very last roles, if not his last.
I think it was his very last one.
Very last role. Which adds a certain level of poignancy to it, I think, that he dies within that as well. And so I think that's kind of where my love of him came from, just seeing this old guy. And then obviously I went back and previous to Theatre of Blood, I hadn't seen a lot of Vincent Price movies, other than like snippets I caught on TV. And obviously you bought me a chunk of these DVDs from my birthday,
I did.
including Witchfinder General, which was
Ah,
your favorite.
that's my personal favorite, yeah.
Yeah, and I really love Shock,
See,
which
I
is
haven't seen that one.
it's really good. But it's like more of a thriller. It's like the earlier part of his career where he was just kind of doing kind of villainous people. It wasn't the full blown gothic that people knew him from the Poe adaptations.
Right.
We should probably say the actual plot of Theatre of
Yeah,
Blood.
we should get back to that probably.
Sorry about
But do you want to
that.
do the synopsis?
Yeah, basically the plot of Theatre of Blood is, I'm never going to get through it without actually laughing at some point, is that a failed theatre actor called Edward Lionheart thinks he is a far greater actor, Shakespearean actor, we have to say, Shakespearean actor, of his generation. He thinks he's one of the best. And there's a circle of critics that systematically pan every single performance he is in, and he gets very, very bitter and actually loses a very prestigious award and turns up and confronts them about this and ends up throwing himself, spoiler alert, ends up throwing himself off a balcony, and he's believed dead, but from death he then plans his revenge, and throughout the course of the movie he murders each critic in a thematic style of the different Shakespeare adaptations he has been in. I think that's about it.
Yeah.
So it's big sort of operatic camp 70s revenge, I would say. So apart from Vincent Price, Diana Rigg is also in it, who some of you will know from The Avengers.
She is, and she does a mean drag king section, which is fabulous. It's worth it for that alone, in my opinion.
It's really good. She's got like a handlebar tash, hasn't she?
She does, yeah, and an afro and big sunglasses, fantastic.
Absolutely marvelous. So, let's go with your take on the movie.
Well, I think I was saying to this to you before that it really is not my favorite Vincent Price film, but it is my favorite Vincent Price performance. And I don't know if that's because the script is so good. No, it's so, you know, there's so much potential in the script for these different parts he's playing. It's so varied. But I think his performance is, albeit camp, is incredibly touching and nuanced, I think.
Well, considering he's in a huge afro for like
Yeah.
10% of the movie, it's pretty heart-wrenching.
But there are moments like that scene, I think it's your favorite scene where he does the big speech and throws himself
Yes.
off the balcony
He basically recites
into the
Hamlet.
Thames.
Yes. And up until the point he throws himself in, it's really dramatic, and then you see that it's like a little dummy. It's
Dummy,
like
yeah.
a doll with a Vincent Price wig on, which is just fucking
An
hilarious.
opera cape.
Yeah,
Oh.
exactly. Fluttering down into the Thames. So that's fantastic. He's actually reciting Hamlet when he kind of throws himself off, and he just does bring a lot of gravitas towards it.
I think that's what it is that I love about Vincent Price. No matter how ridiculous and campy the scripts are or the films are, he's always so into it, so committed to the performance. And I
He
give
does,
him a lot for that.
yeah. He brings his A game.
He does.
And we were talking a lot about his voice. We've talked about his voice previously, and we've said we just want like an audiobook just with Vincent Price's voice on it, because he's got such an amazing deep, you know, it's made for kind of reciting Shakespeare. And we said that's kind of a blessing and a curse maybe for this, in that no matter how he's dressed up, it's kind of like that whole Scooby-Doo thing. It's like, well, you could tell it's fucking Vincent Price because of his voice,
Yeah,
you
like he
know.
has a fake moustache on or some sunglasses, but it's still Vincent Price. So it's kind of
Exactly.
funny watching the critics pretend they don't know who it is.
But that's also the best thing about it, because even if he's reciting the back of a cereal box or something like that, he still sounds amazing.
Did you ever hear the audiobook about witchcraft he did? I think it's called Witchcraft Magic, and it was only released on vinyl. It's not really an audiobook, I suppose. It's just a, I don't know what you'd call it. Anyway, and he's just talking about the history of magic and spell casting. And
Oh wow.
oh, it's fantastic.
No, he's really, I really like stuff that he's like narrated. Like there's a short called Vincent,
Oh.
by Tim Burton, and he, you know, he just recites the lines so beautifully.
I would argue that that is the best thing Tim Burton's ever done.
What, the short Vincent?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. I think Edward Scissorhands is probably the apex as well. I think they're both very interlinked.
But there is something about that early period where it wasn't all just curly trees and black and white stockings,
Oh yeah.
you know?
I mean, we're a bit jaded now at this point.
Yeah, we are. It's bad.
You know, we're kind of we're, I think we feel like we've been let down by Tim Burton a few times. I think primarily, I think something that I agree, I don't necessarily think you agree, but I think Tim Burton is an animator first and foremost, and a stylist. And that's where I think he really comes into his own as a visionary and as a designer, not necessarily as a director of film.
No, I agree with that. I just think, and this goes for music or authors, filmmakers, anything. I just kind of do have a problem when creators generate the same kind of work again and again and again. So, because it becomes pastiche or self-parody, I suppose, in a way, that so much of his early work was varied. If you compare something like Ed Wood to Beetlejuice, I mean, they're not alike at all.
Oh, yeah.
But now I think there's something sort of tawdry about all the CGI and the gothic makeup, and it's all a bit much, I think. It doesn't always serve the story. Like his Alice in Wonderland was awful.
Oh, absolutely terrible. You know, he's a product of all the things he was into when he was younger. But I think the great thing about things like Edward Scissorhands, all those kind of early flicks, was that he was using them. And what I think is always amazing about pop culture is that he was sort of chewing them up and spitting them out as his own, you know, and he was putting his spin on all of those things, like the Frankenstein, you know, myth and Edward Scissorhands and things like that. But then it got to a point where he became, I think, so well known for what he was doing that that became like a Tim Burton trademark, and the visuals were always first and foremost, whereas that wasn't how it was maybe in the beginning.
Then again, there is something like Big Fish. I mean, that wasn't too long ago, and that was quite different for him.
That's outside his comfort zone.
Definitely, we've gone off on a tangent though, but we should get back to
Yeah,
him when we get to Batman.
we're just bitching about Tim Burton, but it's all interlinked, you know. It all
How
works.
did we get there? I don't remember what we were talking about.
We're talking about Vincent Price and how he's worked. His voice. We're talking about
Oh,
his
Edward Scissorhands,
voice.
hands, yeah, of course.
Yeah, and his voice is amazing. So this movie, I like it because I like some of the really. I mean, I'm not going to it for all the really interesting comments on, you know, certain things. Although I think it, like, maybe you would argue with things like Witchfinder General and Tomb of Ligeia and all of his Roger Corman stuff. There's something very surreal, and you could maybe do a healthy dose of criticism about them on a deeper level. I don't think this movie was kind of made for that kind of scrutiny.
No, it wasn't.
No, but having said that, is something that I maybe talked it briefly to you about earlier, was that there is a certain level of self-parody perhaps in this movie. Not self-parody, but self-awareness, that's not really a word, on the part of Vincent Price, because at this point in his career he was known for all of those movies, and maybe had some acting aspirations that were above some of the stuff that he ended up being kind of pigeonholed in. And so I think a lot of that comes into play in his character, and maybe arguably why you think it's his greatest performance, because it does have that level of I'm aware of this part, you know, that I'm in.
Yeah, to me, I think that's a really good point, and I think that is true, certainly, of a lot of actors of that generation. And I know I bring them up all the time, but people like Bette Davis and Joan Crawford, it happened to them too. They got sort of pigeonholed and became parody. But to me, that kind of period, when you look at things like Whatever Happened to Baby Jane, and Joan Crawford had the best ones, like Straight Jacket and Berserk. Like, she did a lot of terrible horror movies in the 60s. I find that period really interesting, and I suppose for me, it's because permutates into high camp. So if you compare that with some of Vincent's earlier movies where it was very genuine and there wasn't much humor to it, I don't warm to those as much because there's something so camp about these performances that I really enjoy.
I think it's strange. I mean, I'm going off on another tangent here. I think it's strange that the 70s and when the times when these movies were happening, and you got these really weird high camp, you know, strange pieces at the same time as like New Hollywood was coming out, and things were getting, you know, this was the same decade as things like Apocalypse Now and Full Metal Jacket and, you know, Bonnie and Clyde and all the new Hollywood where everything went super serious. I just find it strange that in the same decade you had something like Theatre of Blood.
Well, you're talking about two very different types of films because you're talking about your favorite term. You're talking about the blockbuster, the big
I
Hollywood
suppose, yeah.
money-making venture, compared to a very small, low-budget film that was made in England in the early 70s. You know, so
Oh,
you
yeah.
can't, of course, it's
I
interesting that
mean,
those two films came out, but you can't really compare them. You can't compare Theatre of
no,
Blood to Apocalypse Now.
of course I can't. The budgets for one are completely different. I don't know how what the budget was like for Theatre of Blood.
Low, I would say.
It looks low. But
But it
it's a
does the
fun.
best with what it's got. I think the script is really good. I think there are some really great campy lines.
We are completely selling it down the river here because we've seen it and we've kind of put it on and we've kind of laughed at it.
No, I
But
think if
there is some
you're
really.
like, for me, this is the perfect film. If you have a big bunch of like heterosexual friends and you want to watch a terrible horror film and like punch each other and laugh, it's the perfect film. I maintain this.
It's worth it for the duel on the trampolines.
Oh, I knew you were going to bring that up.
Come on, I can't talk about this movie and not bring it up. Please, please, everyone, even if you have to YouTube it and you don't want to watch the whole fucking movie, please just watch the trampolining duel. Basically, the setup is as follows. I'm sorry, Max, but it's gonna happen, all
You
right?
got hit me. Go
It's
on.
my favorite thing in the movie because it's so ridiculous and it perfectly sums up that kind of that ridiculousness of this movie, okay? Basically, one of the lead critics is just exercising. He's fencing, okay, as you do. He's a critic, he's got loads of
In
money,
a
he goes to fence.
YMCA, no less.
Yeah. It's in a horrible community gymnasium. And Vincent Price rocks up in fencing gear, unmasks himself, and then declares that he's going to kill him because it's all based on at that time it's Romeo and Juliet in the movie, so it's the whole Tybalt fight and stuff like that. And so they start fencing, and it gets progressively more ridiculous. So they're bouncing on about five or six trampolines. They're still fencing. And, you know, it's just the stupidest thing you've ever seen.
This goes on
but,
for a good 10, 15 minutes.
Of oh, yeah, yeah. And I think it is actually a homage to Scaramouche, which Max hasn't seen. He doesn't know anything about it. But it's, I think it's a homage to that movie. But it's completely ludicrous. So, but a really good laugh to watch. So that's it one is. Of my highlights of this movie.
No, I'm with you. For me, I'm all about Vincent Price's monologuing and Diana Rigg in drag. They, to me, are what I'm there for when I switch it on.
Excellent. So please do let us know what you make of Theatre of Blood. It's a really fun kind of throwaway horror movie. But Vincent Price has done better, but...
He like... has. If you're going to watch one... I would argue that you should start with the Poe movies, the old Roger Corman ones. Something like Pit and the Pendulum with Barbara Steele or Mask of the Red Death. To me, those ones are... They're not my favourite, but they are the best place to start, I think.
And I would argue... which is what I did recently, is go. I went through chronologically. So I started at the very beginning and watched something like Shock, which I still maintain is a really great movie, even though it's such an early one. And then I worked chronologically through. So you see him do these thriller roles, and then he starts on, you know, the Poe stuff, and then it goes gradually through to, like, Edwards and Sands. And then I've never ever done that before with an actor, sat and watched chronologically the different movies they were in. Admittedly, I didn't see all of them. He's been in tons of movies.
He has.
But I had a selection from all the different eras of his career.
The highlights. And I think,
yeah, exactly. And I think you get a much broader sense of a sort of career trajectory.
But you really should watch Witchfinder General, because that's a crime you haven't seen it.
I know, it's terrible. But I will sit down and watch that at some point. It's still on my to-do list. I've got plenty of DVDs waiting. So, anything else you want to sum up about Theatre of Blood?
No, I think that's about it. It's so much fun. If you like crappy, really campy horror films, it's such a good one.
Should we move on to your pick for this week?
Yeah, this is Batman Mask of the Phantasm. I suppose I'll start with a synopsis. It's basically a dual narrative. So on one hand, it is a new villain that's come to Gotham called Phantasm, who is killing mob bosses and inadvertently framing Batman. And the second narrative is an origin story of how Bruce became Batman. And
you totally kept notes. You didn't just make that up off the
cuff. I did. That was good, though, wasn't it? I just thought, keep it going,
bullshit.
Max, keep it going. So that's Mask of the Phantasm. It's kind of interesting because I think the two films that we've picked are kind of reverse for us. Like, normally you're the superhero, beautifully animated, noir guy, and I'm the campy murder guy. But and in fact, I hadn't seen Mask of the Phantasm until I became friends with you. You showed it to me at university.
And thus changed his life.
It just blew me so far away. It really did. And I think it's true. I would argue, and I love a few of the Batman films, but I would argue that this is the best one. It's the most cohesive. Just, I think it's great. What do you think about Phantasm?
Oh, don't even get me started on this movie. Basically, I think you're right. I think in terms of it being a strong movie, it is as strong a movie as any live action Batman. It is stronger.
Definitely.
But the strange thing about it is that it's this sort of forgotten gem. And I think it when you say, you know, what's your favorite Batman movie, and you say Mask of the Phantasm, whatever, people are like, what the fuck is that? Like, I've never heard of that movie. But if you kind of grew up in 80s, 90s, you will be aware of it roughly in your periphery. Basically, if I may have some context, this came out of a sort of golden age period of animation for Warner Brothers that happened in the early 90s. They did... which is how I got onto it. I was watching, and it was my first exposure to superheroes, really outside of, well, anything. I think I was like 8 or 9, and they were playing the Batman animated TV show, which is all of the same principal players as Bruce Timm, Paul Dini, Edgar Oms, basically did the full-length movie, Mask of the Phantasm, did that. I remember putting that on Saturday mornings, and I was fucking blown away. It was like nothing I had ever seen, for reasons we will go into, I'm sure, later on. But then this movie came out, and I got it on VHS, played it over and over again. It's just the top. It's just the height of and the animation still stands up, everything like that. But I'll let you talk about that. But I just think it deserves some context that it came out of the animated series, and so I watched it from about 8 or 9 years old, probably every week.
Right. See, I did not have it growing up. In fact, I was only barely aware of Batman, I think, growing up. I mean, I'd seen the Tim Burton movies and the really bad, but what was the one that came after Tim Burton?
Why do you want to talk about these? It's still a sore point for me, even though we had the Christopher Nolan ones.
Oh, the Val Kilmer one
We had.
wasn't terrible. It wasn't, I mean, it wasn't good, but
Oh,
it wasn't terrible.
shut up! It's awful.
Nicole Kidman was good.
Nicole Kidman's the only
She
passable
was
thing about it.
beautiful in that film.
Jim Carrey's horrendous.
Oh, I forgot he was in it.
If you put Tommy Lee Jones's Two-Face up against Aaron Eckhart's Two-Face, I mean, you just see how completely laughable and two-dimensional that character is.
But that's ridiculous. That is, to me, like comparing Theatre of Blood with something like The Exorcist. Like, one is supposed to
Oh,
be camp, and one is supposed to be
I
much more
suppose.
artful or realistic. You can't
Well,
really compare the
yeah,
performances.
I agree.
Although
And
I'm
then,
not disputing with you that it's better, because Tommy Lee Jones was is he ain't
oh.
my Two-Face.
It's terrible. But the Alfred in those movies is really good. It has to be
Oh,
stated.
he is. He
He's really
is.
good. Is it Alfred Gough or something like that?
I don't
Michael
know.
Gough, I think. Michael Gough, I think it might be. I don't know. But he died a few years ago. But you know, Batman and Robin, which is where it all kind of really, really went to a head, and that's when you had the bat nipples and
Oh, and
everything
the
looked
back crack
like.
card and stuff.
Yeah, and everything looked like a fluorescent nightclub.
A gay club.
Yeah, pretty much. And as someone stated to me once, and it, you know, I have to agree, you know, if you're really, really stoned, then it's a really good movie. But other than that, you know,
Does have good colours, yeah.
the colors are great, but that's about it.
Although, can I just say it secretly? I know it's a terrible film and it has very, very few redeeming features, but to me, Uma Thurman is one of them. She's terrible, but there's something about her as Poison Ivy that I find so delightful.
We could do a whole podcast on
Yeah, well, we
how
digress.
on Batman and Robin, but
But all I was.
it's not this one.
No, all I was trying to say is that I did not really have much of an awareness or interest in Batman growing up, which is a shame. So I never watched the animated series. And it was only when I was a teenager, when a comic shop opened in Reading, that I started buying like the Xena tie-in, the Dark Horse comics, and I bought the Justice League and Wonder Woman, because they were the obviously these big, strong, buxom women sort of fascinated me. And then I became sort of interested in Batman in that way. So I yeah had never seen Master of the Phantasm until I was, what, 18? Although it's kind of interesting watching it then and seeing that obviously it's for kids. But it's so adult as well, and there are so many themes that are really dark in Phantasm.
Oh, yeah. Well, where do you really start with this movie? Because we both really, really like it. So, I mean, I can't think of anything that's really, really bad about it.
Well, I'm just
Although,
gonna. Can we just talk about some of the best things about it?
yeah, let's do that.
Because, of course, okay, fine. First of all, it has this Art Deco
Oh.
noir film kind of vibe. So if you're into that stuff, it's great. And you probably know more than I do about the graphic novels that would tie into that and stuff, but we'll put that on the blog. I don't really know about that stuff.
Okay, then.
Although,
That's my way of saying I don't want to listen to you talk about
I
Batman
don't
for
know.
like
Although
3 hours.
Long Halloween, I think it's very similar stylistically to something like Long Halloween. No?
Yeah, I
The
think so.
mob bosses, the shadows.
Yeah.
Stay with me.
Well, all that crime family stuff ties in to Long Halloween quite nicely, yeah.
And I'm going to have spoilers in this. There's no way we can talk about my
Oh
favorite
no.
character without talking about the
If you
reboot.
haven't seen the movie, go away and watch it now.
Yeah, or just tune in later, skip ahead. But to me, my favorite thing about this film is Phantasm. Andrea Beaumont herself, who I think is one of the best cartoon fictional women ever
Oh
written. I
yeah.
think she is
Oh yeah.
such a great character.
And I mean, we'd get strung up by this by DC, I'm sure, but to me, you know, along with people like Vicky Vale and things like that, Andrea Beaumont is a quintessential and canon female in the Batman verse. Woman, Poison Ivy, you know, the love interest slash villain. Andrea Beaumont, although she's not technically canon, is to me.
Oh, she is to me too. They were engaged. I just think she's fantastic. And where the revenge thing comes in, if you haven't seen it, and you're not interested, I'll tell you anyway. But the her dad was in with the mob, and he couldn't pay them back for something that we never find out. The mob kill Andrea's father, break up Bruce and Andrea's engagement, and so she goes away, dons a mask, and becomes Smokey the Babe.
But it's important to note about her father, because that's a huge red herring for ages
Oh, yeah, they built
in the
that one.
movie, is that Andrea Beaumont's father is the Phantasm, because he's got this really deep voice and all that kind of stuff, which obviously she's using like a voice synthesizer type thing. So that's a huge red herring. It's important to note the Joker's in this, and you can't really have a really great Batman movie without the Joker.
I think it's the
I
best
think.
Joker appearance. I know you'll disagree with me. I think it's the best Joker appearance in any Batman thing I've ever read or seen.
Oh yeah. He's
You
amazing.
don't agree
I
with
mean,
that.
oh, I do. I do.
You're a Heath
Made
Ledger
Jap
boy.
I mean, I am
He is.
my
Heath
jo
Ledger is
no.
incredible.
Whoa, 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 whoa. My Joker, my quintessential Joker is the one from The Killing Joke by Alan Moore.
Oh, that's a good
That
one.
is the quintessential Joker for me. I mean, this Joker is a perfect one for all ages, and by that I mean it isn't for kids. The thing about the Joker, I think, is he should be funny, but with that edge of sinister. And I think they play it really nicely in this movie, in that you get this kind of malignancy underneath. He's obviously, an evil guy. Like the things he does to one of the mob bosses in particular. But
Owen,
it's
please,
still.
please do the impression.
No, I'm not gonna do the impression.
If you don't know Owen personally, he does an incredible impression of Mark Hamill as the Joker in a particular bit of Last Man
Don't
Standing.
touch me, old man. I don't know where you've been. I totally
Fabulous.
murdered it now.
No, it
Absolutely.
was good. It was good.
But I have to give major props. One to Mark Hamill, who, whenever I'm reading Batman comics, he is the voice that I hear.
Me too.
It's perfect in every way. I mean, he uses his voice like a musical instrument. It's always going up and down, and it's just perfect for that
Oh, what a
character.
lovely thing to say.
It, no, it's it, he does. He does. He was treating it like old 30s radio, apparently. Like he was like,
Oh.
no one can see me, so I can basically do whatever I want. So he was spitting and he was rolling around on the floor and doing these crazy things. And I heard this amazing story that he had a convertible, and he was just driving down the highway in America when he got the part, just doing the Joker laugh,
That's really cool. I didn't
which
know that.
I just wish I'd seen. But in relation to that, I just wanted to mention major props to voice. We're getting really nerdy now. We're going right down into the basement.
Dregs.
But Andrea Romano, who is the voice casting director for this movie, like she cast everyone perfectly. Kevin Conroy is perfect, because not everyone can pull off Batman and Bruce Wayne.
Now, see, for me, Kevin Conroy is Batman.
Yes.
No one will ever do it. I've never seen him in real life, I don't think, so I don't know if he's cute or not, but he's definitely how I imagine Bruce talking.
He's not cute, but he definitely has the voice of Batman and Bruce Wayne. That's awesome.
He
Who
does,
does the
he's
voice of
perfect.
Leia?
I have no idea.
I'm sure we knew that at some point.
I don't think she's famous, though. I think she's, well, I mean, I think she's just known for doing voices for animated features and stuff, which is cool, but I'd never heard of her.
She's in Battlestar Galactica as well, isn't she?
No, she is not.
Yeah, she is. I'm sure. We were watching Battlestar Galactica, and I was like, "That's fucking Andrea Beaumont."
Oh, you did.
We're like, nah. And then you listen, you're like, shit, the fucking bed, that is her.
She said something like, "I am alone."
Yeah.
Oh, yes, that's a really good scene. If you just want to watch anything of Phantasm, just watch that last scene where Andrea's on the boat. Oh, it's like something out of a Joan Crawford movie. It's so perfect.
I mean, the plotting is perfect.
Really tight.
The characters are great. I mean, there's certain bits now, after seeing it so many times, that I think we both switched off for.
Yeah, that big car chase.
There's a big car chase. There's when they start hunting down Batman.
I don't
But
really care about the fight between Joker and Batman in World of the Future.
oh yes, you do.
I
It's amazing.
don't. The Godzilla one.
It's really, really good. There's basically a miniature village of Gotham. It's like the World of the Future type thing, and there's monorails and everything, and then they have a big fight. But there's like these little helicopters that come and they slice Batman up with their propellers. It's fucking awesome.
I think it's the way I feel about that particular sequence and why I get bored in it, besides having seen the film so many times, is kind of the way I feel about Theatre of Blood. Like, you're only there for Vincent Price, so when he's not on screen and the critics are talking about their lives, it's really boring. You just want to know where Vincent is. And that's how I kind of feel about Mask of the Phantasm. I just want to know where Andrea is all the time. And she's just had a very close near-death experience in that sequence, so I just want the fight to be over so we can get back to her.
And I think, at least recently anyway, we're both very, very into character and character work and
And
art.
dialogue.
Yeah, and dialogue, exactly. Kind of both being writers, that's something we kind of like. And there's only so much, I mean, when Batman's fighting, Batman's fighting, you know what I mean? Whereas I think a highlight for me is where he's happy with Andrea and he's at the grave of his parents.
Oh, that's a good one.
Which is an incredible scene, and I think more than, I mean, I had read tons and tons and tons of graphic novels about Batman. He's basically, I'm more of an indie guy now, but Batman's how I got into comic books, and so he's the one kind of superhero that I'll go back to time and time again, because there's so many different versions of him, of which, like you said, we'll put on the blog and things. But that one scene, I think, really summed up Batman, I think, better than a lot of comics that I've read. Well, you know, he, and for those of you who don't know, he just is talking to his parents and he's just like, well, I didn't count on, you know, he's wondering, you know, does he keep going being Batman and things like that. And he says, you know, I didn't count on being happy, which is perfect, you
And then
know.
Andrea turns up and they embrace in the rain and she drops her umbrella. Oh, it's good. It's good, guys. Although my favorite scene is the one where he drops into her hotel room.
And she's like
Oh.
scorned. Bond woman type
And she
thing.
throws the brandy glass down and cries on the bed. Oh,
But then
it's
it's
good.
immediately followed by a really nice like comedy. Isn't it that when Joker sends a bomb?
That's in the same bit. I really hate that guy though. Who's the guy? I don't know his name. He's like the really slimy guy. He looks like Johnny Quest.
Arturo.
Yeah, him. Reeves. Arthur Reeves. Oh, I hate him. Good character, but oh, awful. Although I love it when he gets infected with the Joker poison.
That is awesome. Any Joker story has to have some kind of Joker toxin. So as you can tell, we just fucking love this movie.
I think I've just seen it too many times. In fact, if I never saw it again, I don't think I'd be that bothered. I know the bits I want. I've taken the bits I need. That's it.
But, you know, it's one of the best animated movies I've
So
ever.
good.
I mean, the animation is not on. It's very, very different from something like a Miyazaki or, you know. Completely different style of animation, so it
Oh,
may not
yeah.
be kind of for everyone. It's very, very blocky. Like Max said, it's this Art Deco thing, but there's it's a universe in of itself in that it's Art Deco, but there are personal computers. So it is. I mean, there's things like nods to the World's Fair in New York, which is basically the world of tomorrow. Is supposed to be the World's Fair, so it has this amazing golden age vibe to it, and that's something that people didn't really like at first. Was that everything's very, very blocky and Jack Kirby inspired, and his chin is so square. But
But I
once you,
like that.
but once you get the vibe and you're like, oh, I get it, then it's the best thing you've ever seen. Another little tidbit for you, which is boring for those of you who don't like this kind of thing, but fuck you, I'm gonna tell you anyway. Apparently all the backgrounds were actually painted on black paper rather than white paper, which gives it that sense that like Gotham is basically all shadows, and which I thought was really cool.
That
But
is interesting.
yeah, it's just one of the best Batman movies and one of the best animated movies, and it's really short. No one makes short movies anymore. I know I
Yeah,
argue,
it's how long is it? About 80 minutes?
not even that, I think it might be 70 minutes. It's just over an hour. But every scene matters.
It feels a lot longer than that.
Well, it's an epic movie.
It is.
But yes, everyone, please check out that if you're a comic fan, if you're a Batman fan, and you were loving the Christopher Nolan movies, which we adore as well for very, very, very different reasons. But you know,
Well,
if you're a fan of
I didn't
animation,
love The Dark Knight Rises. I'll just put that out there now.
that's because you're wrong.
I love the other ones, but Dark Knight Rises doesn't work for me, just personally.
That's a whole nother argument we'll have another time.
We should do the trilogy in one of them. That would be kind of interesting.
That would be cool. We'd just bore everyone though. There is a lot to say about Nolan's universe. we're both big Batman fans at this point, aren't we? So
we are, yeah.
That might be nice to kind of talk up, or, you know.
Although, if in case you haven't, if in case you can't tell, I don't know nearly as much about Batman as Owen does. So he is really the one; he's the go-to guy for questions about Batman.
Really, I'm just a massive nerd about Batman. So
you are.
I've seen everything. Have you even seen this? Like, there's like a 1930s serial or something, and it's like pre Adam West, which I have a place for. You fucking hate Adam
don't
West.
Have time, but it's too camp. It's too much.
It's fantastic.
I do love like, Kit though as Catwoman.
Yes. Yeah.
A lot of time for Eartha.
And I think you like Burt Ward's legs, if I'm not mistaken.
Who?
Burt Ward, who plays Robin.
Only in a sort of ironic way. I mean, he's so ridiculous.
Oh, that's fantastic.
He's kind of cute, though. Good tights.
And everyone needs a red telephone in their office, let's be honest.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, we hope you've enjoyed both of those movies, or if you didn't, you got something out of them at least.
If you hate them, just email us and tell us why.
Yeah. Any comments? Well,
which leads us on. I do have a list here that was sent to us that maybe we should discuss.
Let's please do that. Yeah, go for it.
I've printed this out, but you haven't. I don't think you've even seen this, so we're just going to discuss. Basically,
I'll just wing it.
A friend of mine, a digital friend of mine called Rowan, who I know through, I don't know if I should say this, a mutual love of the music of Stevie Nicks. Oh dear, don't judge us.
We have so many listeners right now.
We have it hard enough as it is, let me tell you. But he sent us a list of some of his favorite cult movies, and I've seen a few of them, but I'm just going to read them out. And we'll discuss. So the first one he sent to us is The Wicker Man, the original one, 1973. The Wicker Man?
Yeah, I like The Wicker Man. I haven't seen it in years, I have to say.
Oh, it's a good one. Who's the guy? It's Christopher Lee, right?
Yep, Christopher Lee is, I suppose, the big bad, I would kind of say.
I haven't seen it in years either. I remember loving it.
It's a very strange movie. It's kind of like Bride of Frankenstein in that it all just climaxes. Nothing happens, but it all kind of builds and builds and builds and builds, and then you get that final scene.
I do kind of hate the fact that it's like on the cover. It's like that Planet of the Apes thing, you know, like you can't really experience it for the first time anymore because you know what the twist is.
Oh yeah, don't tell me the fucking spoiler like when I buy it, you know?
Yeah, like The Sixth Sense, like you can't. I don't believe that anyone enjoys that film anymore.
Yeah, it's the same as the Star Wars thing, like the Darth Vader thing, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
The twist in Empire, you know.
No, I always forget that's coming.
Really?
I'm surprised. Yeah, I am.
Okay, then. It must be just Mark Hamill's acting, then.
It's, Empire. Well, I'm not going into that. The second film I've seen, the second film he's seen since I haven't seen, it's called Santa Sangre, which is from 89, which I've got, it's on my bedside table right now, but I haven't watched it yet.
What is that about?
I'm gonna reach for it. It's Jodorowsky, who did Holy Mountain, which I remember calling you about and saying you have to watch it. I don't think you ever did. Yeah. Or no, I think you started and it was too much for you.
Well, don't say it was too much for me.
I remember you saying like you were really tired or something and it was so trippy.
Yeah, well, I put it on at like 12:30 and you know, it's just weird as shit. So I was like, well, I'm going to wait until an afternoon where I can actually watch this and not be really tired and space out.
Yeah, no, don't do that. You need to put an afternoon for Holy Mountain. But Santa Sangre is a film he did after that about, I don't really know what it's about. It's about a church being torn down and circus performers.
Right. It sounds pretty good.
But it says the director of cult classics like El Topo creates a truly disturbing blend of horror and melodrama. It looks really good. The cover is amazing. So I'm going to check that out and we'll discuss that later on.
You can let me know if that's any good because you got a copy. Yeah.
The third one, and Rowan is a man after my own heart, is Pink Flamingos.
Right. You're a huge John Waters fan.
So Pink Flamingos might be my favourite film of all time. You still haven't seen it, have you?
I have not. I've only seen
You'll hate
Crybaby
it.
Of John Waters movies.
See, the way you feel about Pink... The way I feel about Crybaby is the way you'll feel about Pink Flamingos.
Which is?
Like, it's cool, you want to love it, but you don't.
Okay, right. Okay.
I think you'll love the idea of Pink Flamingos, and you'll think it's really cool and culty, but I think it's too gross for you. I don't think you'll enjoy the point of it.
Well, for those who don't know, most of you will, John Waters is obviously... you explain what John Waters' thing is. It's basically like bad taste high camp, right?
I suppose so, yeah. In the most artful way possible. I mean, for me, Pink Flamingos work, and you can definitely intellectualize Pink Flamingos, I think. I think it has a lot of really interesting stuff to say, but it is disgusting. I mean, it does culminate. I don't think I'm spoiling anyone's enjoyment of this film to say it does culminate in Divine, this huge, incredible drag queen eating a dog shit, which she actually does. So if you can't deal with that, you're not going to love it, you know? It has incredible performances like from Mink Doll as Connie Marbles, and it has a live execution. It's absolutely incredible.
So it's an acquired taste, right?
Yeah, I mean, John Waters, to me, when I think of cult, I think John Waters. It's trashy, disgusting, beautiful. And I was lucky enough to go and see Pink Flamingos in the cinema not long ago. And just,
It was the BFI, right?
this was at the BFI, and just, they had like an uncut season, and they were playing like uncut or banned films. And just seeing it for the first time, I'd seen it before, but seeing it for the first time with a live audience was so interesting. Like, people were laughing and gagging and excusing
And
themselves. Oh, it was incredible.
yeah, for those who are listening that don't know, BFI is basically the British Film Institute, and it's on South Bank in London, an incredible place, and they do lots and lots of movies, cult movies and old movies, and they play them. It's basically a really great institution, and we used to go there a lot when we were at college because we lived near London, and it's just a really great place. And it is worth mentioning that if you've seen lots of cult movies, or you love movies in the privacy of your own home, and then you see them for the first time on the big screen, it is a very, very different experience. And some of my best experiences I've had in movies are watching movies that I've seen and known and loved, and then I've seen them on the big screen for the first time in sort of reverse order. That's been incredible.
Well, don't forget that we saw Batman Mask of the Phantasm at the BFI.
Yes, we did.
So that was really good. Anyway, I'll keep going. He's got a few more. Dark Crystal, I haven't seen since I was a kid, so I don't remember anything about that film.
Me neither. It's sort of like the baby brother of Labyrinth. Everyone has seen Labyrinth, but they haven't seen Dark Crystal.
Well, see, Labyrinth is on his list too, and I can tell you everything about Labyrinth. But Dark Crystal, I don't know anything about, so I might have to buy that and rewatch it because I don't remember anything.
Me neither. All I know is that Jim Henson is a fucking genius.
Yes, but we'll check that one out. Another one that I think you've seen, but I definitely haven't, is Videodrome.
Yeah, Videodrome's Cronenberg, isn't it?
Yeah, is that
Again,
one with Debbie Harry in it?
I don't think so.
Yeah, Debbie Harry's in Videodrome. I'm sure she is.
It's a very weird movie. Again, I haven't seen it since I was about 17, 18, and it blew my mind enough to know that I didn't want to watch it again for a couple of years. And I never kind of got around to it, but it's early-ish Cronenberg. By that, I mean kind of psychological. There's some body horror elements to it.
Which one's
I think it would,
Cronenberg? He's the fly, right?
yeah, Cronenberg is a fly, more on which later. He did Crash, which is a really great movie about people get off to car crashes. So the perverse, the kind of subversive, the subconscious, the kind of things that leave us all twisted, that was what Cronenberg was best known for way back when. He did a ton of stuff like Scanners, Videodrome is one of them. But I think you'd really, really get a kick out of
It sounds like
it.
it would. I mean, I've seen The Fly, obviously, but Videodrome, I'm going to have to check out.
Videodrome's much more culty than The Fly.
Okay, yeah, Fly is kind of mainstream, really, isn't it? But Rowan has just one more on his list, and it's The Fountain from 2006, which I had never heard of. Yes,
Aronofsky.
I'd never heard of it. I've heard it's this big, I've read up on it, and apparently it's this big spiritual, existential piece of cinema.
Well, it's the Hugh Jackman Rachel Weisz movie.
Did you see it?
Aronofsky, I've seen maybe the first half of it, just because I think I was on a plane or something, and I caught it, and then I didn't see the rest. I've meant to sit down. It got very, very mixed reviews. Not that that should ever put you off. You should always kind of make up your own decision about a movie without anyone else's input. But I just never got around to watching the rest of it. Apparently, I mean, he's a strange director because he does some really kind of down to earth stuff, and then he'll go off and do something like The Fountain, which is really cosmic. He did what was that movie? Requiem for a Dream. Didn't Aronofsky do that?
I don't know, I've never seen it.
I'm sure he did. But he did Black Swan as well, which is
He
one of his
did.
more mainstream movies, let's say. But I have always wanted to watch The Fountain. It's really cosmic, isn't it?
Yeah, well, Rowan loves it, but I googled it to find out what it was about, and all the screen captures from it really put me off. And that's terrible, isn't it? But it just looks like an Evanescence cover, you
Right.
know, like it's all that swirly, photoshoppy trees and stuff. But I will check it out because that's just my initial impression. I'm often wrong.
I think it's like one of those things, like I think you could put it in the same ballpark, although I think the example I'm going to give is much crappier. This new Cloud Atlas thing, like we're all connected through different lives. So I
Yes.
think in The Fountain, the cosmic thing is one aspect of it. And I've seen clips of another bit where like Hugh Jackman's like a Spanish conquistador,
Oh, that's cool.
looking for this woman, and that shit is awesome.
Wait, this is The Fountain, or are we talking about Cloud
Yeah,
Atlas?
no, this is The Fountain.
That sounds really cool.
Cloud Atlas looks like a shit, sort of a bargain basement version of that,
Yeah.
of The Fountain. Like The Fountain looks somewhat interesting, and it like has some interesting things to say. Like Cloud Atlas looks like something, like a movie for people who really just want to swim with dolphins.
Well, I think the only Aronofsky movie I've seen is Black Swan. I wasn't crazy about it, although there was a lot I liked about it. So I would give The Fountain a go.
Yeah, I would as well. I'm gonna sit down and watch that too.
Write that one down. But that's Rowan's list, so that's all we were
It's a pretty
given. But
good
thank
list.
you, Rowan, for sending that
Thank
to
you,
us.
Rowan. Really varied list as well. Same kind of thing. You had some
Definitely.
horror in there, some body horror, some bad taste and stuff. I like that list. That was good. If any of you out there also have a list that we can equally celebrate or slag the fuck off, then please send it in, and we'll do our best to read it out when we get around to doing this podcast again in 2015.
Well, we've got Skype now. I have a microphone, so technically we should be back on track now, hopefully.
Famous last words.
We're going to listen to this back and there's going to be no sound. You know that, right?
Or we'll both sound like Cthulhu. You know when you ring someone and the connection's really bad and you just kind of go.
Bubbly. Yeah.
It'll be like that.
I don't want to know how you were making that sound. Tell
Right,
me.
so movies for next time.
It was your idea for the theme, so do you want to
Yes. Because
introduce?
I'm really good with titles.
You are. It's one real virtue that Owen has.
It's
Among many.
one of my few. Basically, we were coming up with titles and we were like, oh, what would be cool? And we didn't necessarily want to do things that were relatively simple. We like tenuous links, don't we? And we like linking movies that people will be like, that's not with fucking theme. But when
Well,
you
you want it
think.
to do it vague enough that you can have a variety of films that you
Yeah,
discuss.
sure. And we will actually put a short list after the next podcast because there was loads of movies that I wanted to include, but we poo-pooed because they weren't cult enough or this or that. But the theme we went for was Metamorphosis. And the movie I ended up choosing, which kindly links us in from Rowan's choices, I went for The Fly by David Cronenberg because it was the most literal, gross, culty, icky metamorphosis movie I could think of.
I've only seen it once and I haven't seen it for years, so I'm gonna have to watch it again.
It's gnarly.
Yeah, I remember it making me feel really sick. I think I watched it with you, didn't I?
I think you did, yeah.
And I was prepped, Gina Davis, but I was not prepared for how sick that would make me feel.
It's a great movie. So let's both rewatch that. And what about you?
Yes. Mine is one of my very favorite films of all time. I've only just discovered this film and I've already watched it about 5 times in about 2 weeks. And I'm going to do Female Trouble by John Waters. It's the one he did after Pink Flamingos. Not nearly as disgusting, but just as wonderful. So, Female Trouble.
Excellent.
Check it
Okay,
out.
so those are your two movies, John Waters' Female Trouble and David Cronenberg's The Fly. Should we talk about some general culty stuff we're into really briefly before we sign off?
Yeah, I don't know how much I have. Basically, for Christmas, my parents did not know what to get me, and I just asked for a big stack of DVDs. And I've literally got like every John Waters film now, so I've been watching those again. So I've watched Hairspray and Crybaby and Pecker. They're all there. I've also, what else did I get? I got Cannibal Holocaust, which I have not seen for years, so I'm really excited about watching that one again. I got A Night of the Living Dead box set because I've only seen Night of the Living Dead. I've never seen Dawn of the Dead or Day of the Dead, so I'm really excited about those.
Sweet.
And I think that's really about it. They're the culty films that I'm into at the moment, I think. Yes.
Okay.
That's about it for me.
So some more horror. You're kind of going in the horror bad taste route
Not
recently.
really. Apart from the George A. Romero, really, yeah, I'm going down the bad taste route. And I've just finished reading John Waters' book that he released last year, which is called Role Models, which was really interesting, I thought.
Okay.
I'm just sort of really fascinated with John Waters as a person and this sort of collective he had called the Dreamlanders, which were Divine and Mink Stole and Edith Massey and those people that were in all of his films. Just find something about their life really interesting and all these stories about them, like they didn't have enough money for drugs, and so they would send off like UNICEF packets, and they would get them and they'd go to door to door in Baltimore in the 70s asking, for charity money, and then they would spend it all on crack and stuff. I mean, I find that really interesting. And they would steal
Okay.
clothes for their movies, and they would shoot the movies in public, and I don't know, there's something about them that it's like an art collective, I think, of them. And Divine just is such an inspiration, I think.
And they sound confrontational in the best possible way, you know?
Yeah, but
Like
it's in that kind of
confrontational art.
crybaby way, I think. Like all the misfits are welcome. It's not something
Right.
inclusive. It's something looking constantly for new inspiration and converts, to this sort of religion, I suppose. I just find it the whole mythology of that time period fascinating. I think quite a few of them, I think most of them are dead now. I know Divine is, God rest her. But I don't think you've met Divine yet, probably, have you? You've never seen a film with her in.
No, not yet. No. I plan to dip in and out of John Waters.
You should watch the original Hairspray because Divine plays the role that John Travolta played in the new one, which
Okay.
I did
All
not enjoy at all. Like, Hairspray is not a musical in my head, but the old ones I loved. I thought it was really good. Now that's got Debbie Harry and Sonny Bono and Ricki Lake and all that stuff in.
Okay.
So yeah, no. So Divine, John Waters. That's my life at the moment, I think.
Okay. There's other than I mean I'm doing a I don't have a lot of time for outside reading because I'm prepping a new comic, so I'm doing some research for that, as I've told you, that is about kind of golden age Hollywood, and reading a lot about the time period. I'm reading a great book called Gone Hollywood, and there's an amazing book on Douglas Fairbanks called Richard Schechner, I think it's called Schechner, who wrote for Time magazine, and it's incredibly in-depth psychological study of Douglas Fairbanks, and we've talked a lot about kind of Golden Age Hollywood, so I'm doing a lot of kind of that kind of research and just kind of picking in and out because I'm fascinated by that time period, as well as reading fiction like Sunnyside by Glenn David Gold, which is a really really great book about it interweaves fact and fiction, but one of the factual figures in it is Charlie Chaplin. And so seeing how someone writes a fictional book about a factual character is really interesting to me. And I'm fascinated by that time period. And other than that, the only two that are really occupying my head right now are my favorite new comic is called Saga, which is by Brian K. Vaughan, who I know you've read some of his stuff before.
Is he Pride of Baghdad? Was that
He
him?
did Pride of Baghdad. He did Why the Last Man, which I'm a huge fan of. He did a ton of stuff. Ex Machina, just loads of amazing comic books over the years. Done some stuff for Marvel like Runaways, but Saga's his return after he worked on Lost and some TV shows and stuff like that. It's basically like Romeo and Juliet in space is how it's been described. So there's these two species in a sort of intergalactic war. And these two young people from either side fall in love and decide to have a baby and become deserters. And it sounds really Dungeons and Dragons, but the characters are written like New York hipsters. So the character voices are, no one writes characters like Brian K. Vaughan. It's just a really fantastic, weird, funny, brilliant read. So that's my favorite comic book right now. And I've talked to you about this. I'm really pumped for Django.
That's the Samuel L. Jackson one, right?
The new QT movie. So I'm really, really excited for that. So I've been going back and rewatching all of my Quentin Tarantino movies, and I've never been like, he's my favorite director. Oh my God, he's amazing. But whenever a new Quentin Tarantino movie comes out, I get pumped. I get really
Oh,
excited.
see, I can feel myself losing listeners, but to me, he's how I feel about Tim Burton.
Oh
I think he's let
shit.
me down a few too many times. I'm open. I'm ready to go in. I'm ready to have my mind changed. But like Inglourious Basterds, I really did not enjoy at all.
It's a great movie. I
I just
think
didn't enjoy it.
it's not the same as Tim Burton. I think the biggest
No, it's
problem
not. It's not.
with Quentin Tarantino is that he can't self-edit. He cannot, make an hour and a half movie. Don't make a 3-hour movie. You don't need to do it.
Yeah.
I thought Inglourious Basterds, apart from being absolutely amazingly written, was way too long. But what makes me excited is seeing like Leonardo DiCaprio in the Quentin Tarantino universe,
Yeah.
and
I mean,
seeing him.
I have a lot of time for Quentin, that he is an incredible director, he's an incredible writer, and he has so much control over these worlds that he creates. I mean, I have a lot of respect for that. And he's created some incredible films, like, to me, Kill Bill and Reservoir Dogs,
Pulp
Pulp
Fiction.
Fiction. I mean, these are amazing films. They're not really my cup of tea, really, but they are incredible. So I do have a lot of time for him. I think I just really hate Inglourious Basterds. It really,
Rubbed you up the wrong way.
it really did. I had a really bad taste in my mouth for a few days after that one. I
That's
did.
great.
They had some great moments.
We'll just agree to disagree then.
I mean, I do appreciate that it is an aesthetic and a time period that I'm not really interested in. I'm not really
Think you
big
were.
on the war and things like that.
I think you had a problem with the moral situation it presented.
Well, if I remember, I saw it, I've only seen it once, so maybe I should see it again. But I did watch it in the cinema, and I did have a problem. And I mean, at this time, me and Owen were living in a place called Staines, which is where Ali G is from, and it's just this really disgusting, scratty town. I mean, it's horrible. It was my least favorite place to live, wasn't it yours? It was awful.
Yeah, I mean it was
The
pretty
physical
crappy. I
place.
mean it was a crappy area, but you could watch a ton of movies and just kind of get lost.
Sure,
It
good.
was yeah.
And I watched Inglourious Basterds there, and I just had a problem, and I couldn't tell. Maybe it was the audience that so offended me about the film, and so I came out hating the film when really I should have hated the people in the audience. But I felt like they were taking such delight in killing Nazis and stuff, and I don't know. I sort of left being like, I'm not really sure what to take of that. But again, maybe that wasn't intended. Maybe that was just. I mean, they were all sort of cheering and saying, "Yeah, die
Well,
Nazi fuckers!" And sort
yeah.
of thought this was in the audience, and I sort of thought, I'm not sure if. I wasn't quite sure how I should feel about that.
I think maybe 2 points on that. One is that an audience, if we're talking about the flicks, we're talking about cinema rather than, being at home. An audience can hugely change the experience of watching a movie.
Oh, absolutely.
For good or ill, you may not be into a movie, and the audience kind of turns it around. You think this is actually really fun. I'm watching this with everyone else, and
Well,
it's
see,
a
I think
shared
horror films are always better in the cinema.
experience.
Like
I
hearing
think so.
that reaction, that sort of joint terror in an audience excites me.
Yeah, I think so. But in other cases, it can go completely the other way, and your experience with an audience can kind of turn you against a movie. Which is obviously,
It's
what
a good
happened
point.
in this
Maybe I'll
case.
watch it again, see how I feel about it.
Okay, well, I think that's about it for this week. Go and check out the movies that we suggested, guys. We're sorry it's been so long. We've missed you.
We have, but we promise to do this with alarming regularity from now on.
Well, we really hope so anyway. famous last words again. Hopefully we'll see you guys back here soon. We'll do a follow-up pod, not a follow-up podcast, a follow-up post like we did for last time about some kind of wider reading and stuff that we're into that's related to this kind of stuff, some more revenge movies. So there's other stuff to check out if you can be asked. But for now, adios and keep culting.
See you later.
Wasn't any indication that my